Hello and welcome to the Good Gut Girl podcast. So today I'm going to be talking to you about what can and does go wrong with gut health. But before I do that, I'm just going to introduce myself to you. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Sharon Hesp. I'm a degree qualified naturopath and I specialize in gut health. I live in Herstal Grove with my husband and a beagle. And I run a busy naturopathic clinic and I also run online gut healing courses. Most weekends though, you will find me in the garden. So today we're going to be talking about what can and does go wrong with your gut health. And as you can imagine, there are quite a few things that can and do go wrong, but I'll be talking about the most common things that can and do go wrong. So we've got food intolerances, fructose malabsorption, SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, candida or yeast infections, parasite infestations, salicylate sensitivities, histamine sensitivities, pyroluria, and gut dysbiosis. So I'm going to concentrate mainly on the first three, just to give you a bit of a background about what can go wrong, what does go wrong, how to test for things, and just a generalized view of gut problems in general. So we're going to start with food intolerances. So a food intolerance or a food is sometimes known as a food sensitivity. There's a really big difference between a food intolerance or sensitivity and an allergy. So a food allergy is mediated by the IgE part of your immune system, whereas an intolerance or sensitivity is mediated by the IgG part of your immune system. So they're both mediated by your immune system, but by very, very different pathways. So with a food intolerance, and I do prefer to call them intolerances over sensitivities, no real reason. With a food intolerance, the reaction that you get is delayed. So with an allergy, the IgE mediated allergy, you can get a reaction within 30 seconds to 10 minutes and they can be life-threatening. Whereas a food intolerance, your reaction will happen between 30 minutes and 4 to 5 days after you've ingested that particular food, which makes it quite tricky to work out what's going on. And this is why I find testing really, really does help. And testing, I do feel, is a very, very effective way to discover if you do have a food intolerance. So to test, I sometimes run a finger prick blood test in clinic. And if I do, you need to be over 18 years old and you need to be okay with the finger prick blood test. Or alternatively, if you don't live near to me in Sydney, I just send you to a lab and we have the food intolerance test done by an external lab. So what happens with a food intolerance is that when you have a leaky gut syndrome, the gut junctions in your gut are wider than they should be. And if your digestive system isn't as strong as it should be, proteins from those foods drop through into your bloodstream. Your immune system comes along and says, you shouldn't be here, and it attacks it, and that's when you have a reaction. So the key with a food intolerance is to identify what the problematic foods are, B, remove those problematic foods 100% of the time for a good 3 months. You do some work with your gut to heal it up. You do some work with your immune system to stop it from overreacting. Another thing to be aware of with food intolerances, and this is a common occurrence, what happens is you might have a stressful event and 3 months later, then all of a sudden you start to get lots of signs and symptoms of food intolerances, which is something that I went through in the previous podcast. So that's a common occurrence. So we remove the foods for 3 months and then we introduce them one at a time. And as you can imagine, it's quite a thorough thing to do. And it's one of my, I love to work with people who have food intolerances. So then the next thing that can go wrong is fructose malabsorption. So a fructose malabsorption problem happens when you've had food intolerances, or you've had SIBO, or you've had some gastroenteritis, or you've had gut dysfunction for a considerable amount of time and you have ignored the problems. Or I often also see fructose malabsorption occur after eating disorders. So if you had an eating disorder such as anorexia or bulimia when you were younger and you've really done some severe damage to your gut, as you get older, that will turn into fructose malabsorption. So with fructose malabsorption, the big problem with that is that fructose is quite a large molecule. And if your gut's in poor shape, so you've got this leaky gut syndrome, because the fructose is such a large molecule, it cannot absorb in through the small intestine. So it sits in the small intestine and it ferments and it expands. Okay, so that expansion creates bloating and it can create some significant pain as well. And two, your liver will really struggle because that excess fructose then goes to the liver and it also cannot deal with it. So with fructose malabsorption, some hallmark signs and symptoms can be elevated liver enzymes. You get gut pain that is quite high up under your ribs. That gut pain may be severe. You'll be worse after garlic and onions, and you'll be worse after fruit on an empty stomach. So with fructose malabsorption problems, what you need to do is remove those high fructose foods for 2 to 3 weeks. You can either do that by going on a low fructose diet, which sometimes I just do that with my patients if their symptoms are really, really clear, or sometimes I do run a fructose malabsorption test. And I like to use the SIBO doctor because their testing regime is very good and I'm always been very happy with it. So you keep those fructose foods out for a good 3 weeks, and then you introduce lower fructose foods for a couple of weeks. And over around the 3 month period, you gradually reintroduce the higher and higher fructose foods. Obviously, you need to do the work with the gut to get it all healed and sealed back up and get it in much better shape. You really need to reduce down that inflammation as well. So there is quite a bit more to fructose malabsorption, and that will be a subject of a podcast in the future as well. So then the next thing that often can go wrong with your gut health is SIBO. And lots of people would have seen it as SIBO. So SIBO is short for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So with SIBO, the bacteria is in the small intestine that should not be there. That bacteria should be in the large intestine. And that's what causes the problems, because when you eat things that are highly fermentable, such as broccoli or cauliflower, and there are other highly fermentable foods, that bacteria starts to ferment in the small intestine, and the bacteria should not be there. So the bacteria starts to ferment, it starts to expand, and that is what causes the bloating and gas and other problems that happen with SIBO. So the key is a big part of having a SIBO problem is that you usually have a damaged migrating motor complex. So your migrating motor complex is what sweeps the food through the small intestine. And if that's damaged, it doesn't do a very good job of it. So the bacteria can't actually get to the large intestine where it's supposed to be. So when there's a SIBO problem, we do remove certain foods, or it's more we reduce the amount of those foods. So we stop so much food sitting in there and fermenting. We also take you to 3 meals a day so that your migrating motor complex has a chance to work, because your migrating motor complex does not work until your gut is empty. So if once your gut's been empty for 90 minutes, the migrating motor complex kicks in and it sweeps that food through to the large intestine. Then in another 90 minutes, it pushes the food through again. So by having 3 meals a day, your gut will become empty and that migrating motor complex can start to work. Often though, it can be damaged by gastroenteritis. It can be damaged by many, many things. The migrating motor complex can be damaged. And that is for another podcast, which I'm going to do in depth later on. another problem that can go wrong is a candida or a yeast infection. Now, this happens when you eat too much sugar, you drink too much alcohol, and you eat too many complex carbohydrates. So a yeast infection or a candida infection is just an overgrowth of bacteria that is, it can be just in the large intestine, but it can also be systemic. And when you have a systemic candida infection, it's because you've got leaky gut syndrome, that those candida molecules are leaking through to the bloodstream, and it's having an effect on you. And the key with that is to really lower down those the yeast numbers, and you do that by reducing those sugars. And you also do it, I use herbal herbal medicines and nutrients to help kill off the candida or yeast. And candida infections are very, very prone to stressful events. So what happens is you might get super, super stressed, the gut junctions open up straight away, and the candida flows into the bloodstream, and you just feel absolutely worse. So you need to get all of those things under control. Parasite infestations are common and a part of what can go wrong with your gut health. So parasite infestations can be controversial. Do you kill off the parasites? Do you just get the gut healthier? Are the tests accurate? Because there is a certain amount of controversy. Is the testing process too accurate? Is it picking up dead parasites? So parasites are a controversial thing with gut health. I do tend to see people that have a lot of symptoms from parasites. Some people may have parasites and not even know it, and they don't get symptoms. But as a gut health naturopath, I do see a lot of people that have parasite infestations, and they can be tricky to get rid of. You do need to do some dietary work, you need to do some gut work, and you need to do some work to get those levels down. Salicylate and histamine sensitivities are both gut problems that I don't see a lot of, because most people have food intolerance, fructose, SIBO, or candida problems. And it's when we've ruled out those first four and parasites that we sometimes look at salicylates. So salicylates are natural chemicals that occur in the skins of fruits and vegetables. And if you have too many salicylates, your liver cannot cope with them. And it's almost, with a salicylate and histamine problem, it's almost like what we call in the naturopathic world, it's like a bucket effect. So if you're carrying a bucket of water down the road and that bucket of water is full, it will slosh over and create a huge mess. It's a little bit the same with salicylates and histamines in your diet. If you can keep that load underneath your reaction time or your reaction level, then you won't have any problems. But you need to keep the salicylate levels low for a little while, and you need to do a little bit of work with your gut to improve that. And it's the same with histamine sensitivity. You need to keep the histamine foods quite low and do a bit of work with the gut to be able to build it back up again. So pyroluria, it's not actually a gut problem per se, but lots of people that have pyroluria do have gut problems because of the copper zinc imbalance. So with pyroluria, often you have too much copper and not enough zinc, which then leads to gut problems. And as well, it leads to a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress, and then that rolls into gut problems. So pyroluria is something that can go wrong. And then lastly, you've got your gut dysbiosis, which is when you've got an overgrowth of bad bacteria that is in your large intestine, okay? That maybe candida is sometimes classed as gut dysbiosis, but you might have an overgrowth of strep, you might have an overgrowth of Klebsiella, you might have an overgrowth of staph. The key is to find out what is overgrowing in that large intestine and work on trying to lower the levels down with foods and with nutrients and with herbal medicine. So that was quite a quick, brief rundown on what can go wrong with gut health. With all gut problems, as you know, I like to test to see what's going on. If you test, then you can find out exactly what the problem is. So with food intolerances, it's a finger prick test. With fructose and with SIBO, it's a breath test. With candida, it's a stool test. With parasites, it's stool. With both salicylates and histamines, there is no test currently available. You just need to go on either a low salicylate diet or a low histamine diet to find out. Pyroluria testing is available. I will often just run off a high copper blood test and symptoms. And gut dysbiosis, we do discover that via a stool analysis. So all of those things are the sort of things that can go wrong and do go wrong with people. So to find out what goes wrong, we do test, and that reveals lots and lots of things. So I do like to do that. And as well with the fructose malabsorption, you don't have to test with that. I can put you on a low fructose diet for 2 to 3 weeks. And if you feel absolutely perfect after that, then we know that it's a fructose malabsorption problem. With testing, some people are very reluctant to test when it comes to natural medicine, and because they say that the testing doesn't have good science behind it. I do disagree with that. And I think a lot of the problems come from the fact that you may get tested for food intolerances, you show positive for food intolerances, you remove those foods, but you don't feel any better. The reason that you don't feel any better is because it's not the food intolerances that are causing your problem. Sure, you may have a food intolerance, but that is not what is causing your symptoms. Fructose malabsorption may be causing your symptoms, or a parasite may be causing your symptoms, or it might be SIBO, or it might be pyroluria. So the key is, and I, as a naturopath, I test what the most thing that it's most likely to be. So for instance, if you were to present in my clinic and you had anxiety and you had reflux and you had gut pain high up under your ribs and that gut pain was severe, you were worse after garlic and onions and you were worse after fruit on an empty stomach, fructose malabsorption would be the first thing I would test for, or I would say, let's put you on a low fructose diet. If we put you on a low fructose diet and there was no change in symptoms, or we ran a test and the test was negative, we would look at the most next likely problem, which might be SIBO, or it might be candida, or it might be a food intolerance. So some people's symptom picture is really clear and some people's symptom picture is not clear. And that's just an individual thing, because as humans, we're all individuals and we won't have the same health conditions or the same health issues as the people that we do work with. And that's what's so dangerous about people going on specific diets, because people they work with go on those diets. What's going on in their gut is not what's going on in your gut, and you shouldn't use that as a reason to go on a special diet, and neither should you be using Dr. Google. So thank you for listening today to my podcast about what can and does go wrong with gut health. And the next podcast is going to be all about the causes of poor gut health. So please keep an eye out for that. And thanks for listening.